Here you have Jesus being tempted by the devil. In verse 5, it says, "The devil taking him into a high mountain showed unto him all the kingdoms of the world in a moment of time. And the devil said unto him, All this power will I give thee, and the glory of them. For that is delivered unto me, and whomsoever I will, I give it." So we know that it was delivered, and I think everybody is aware that when God created the heavens and the earth, they belonged to Him. And He gave it to Adam to steward and to be the overseer of. And then Adam, through transgression, delivered it over to the adversary, the devil. So it was Adam's high treason that delivered it to the devil. And Psalm 24:1 says, the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. So the earth belongs to whoever God decides to give it to. It's His. He can do what pleases Him. He created it. He formed it. He put the whole thing together. And He gives it to who He wants to. And in Genesis 17, we'll see who did He decide to give it to. We'll also see how long did He decide to give it to them for. Genesis 17, verse 7. It says, "I will establish my covenant between me and thee, and between thy seed after thee in their generations for an everlasting covenant, to be a God unto thee and to thy seed after thee. And I will" what? "Give. I will give unto thee and to thy seed after thee the land wherein thou art a stranger, all the land of Canaan for an everlasting possession, and I will be their God. And God said unto Abraham, Thou shalt keep my covenant. Therefore, thou and thy seed after thee in their generations." Verse 8 here is a great ray of light that God was going to give the land. It's His. He can give it to whoever He wants. It's like if you own something, you can give it to whoever you want to. That's your privilege. But verse 9 carries with it the obligation of obedience and allegiance to the true God. He reserved the land for him. He gave it to him. Now they were to be obedient, and their allegiance was to be to him, and he would be their God. Look at Joshua 1. I think we all know the story. The children of Israel took a vacation in Egypt for about 430 years. And the land which they had, which they owned, which was their inheritance, was occupied by a bunch of unbelievers, and they had to physically remove them from the land. And it starts out here in verse 1 of Joshua 1. "Now after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spake unto Joshua the son of Nun, Moses' minister, saying, Moses my servant is dead. Now therefore rise and go over the Jordan, thou and all this people, unto the land which I do give them, even to the children of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot shall tread upon, that have I given you, as I said unto Moses, from the wilderness to Lebanon, even unto the great river, the river Euphrates, and the land of the Hittites, and unto the great sea toward the going down of the sun shall be your coast. There shall not any man be able to stand before thee all the days of thy life. As I was with Moses, I will be with thee. I will not fail thee, nor forsake thee. Be strong and of good courage, for unto this people thou shalt divide in inheritance the land, which I swear unto their fathers to give them. Only be strong and very courageous, that thou mayest observe to do according to all the law which Moses my servant commanded thee. Turn not from it to the right hand or to the left, that thou mayest prosper whithersoever thou goest. This book of the law shall not depart out of thy mouth, and thou shalt meditate therein day and night. That thou mayest observe according to all that is written therein. And then thou shalt make thy way prosperous, and then, not before, thou shalt have good success." This is a tremendous record here of Joshua dividing the land. And God had sworn it to their fathers to give it to them. It was their inheritance. Here they cross over the Jordan and begin to go into the land to take it back. But there were people there, and they didn't want to leave. So what happened was, is this: they went to war physically to recover what was theirs. This wasn't a war of aggression. People say that God was a bloody God, that Joshua and the children of Israel were a bloody people. But the truth of the matter is that every man has a right to his inheritance. And God had sworn it to them, and now they had to physically remove the people who were there. And when you think of it spiritually, the adversary knew that God had promised this land. Where would he put all his people? Right on the land that God had promised to the children of Israel, because he could then defeat God. He could defeat the purpose of God, which is to have a chosen people and to have a land where they could live and where they would worship him. So the adversary just moved in all kinds of people there, and when Joshua went in, they told him to leave. And they said, well, I don't think so. And some things happened. But verse 8 is a great promise of a faithful God who swore to give this land. And you know, every time Israel was faithful, they didn't lose a single man in battle. And that's a tremendous thing. If you look at all of the battles in the Old Testament, you'll see that there are certain things that are in place. One is the leader was sold out in his allegiance to the one true God. And the other was that the people were also followed the leader, and they were sold out in the allegiance to the one true God. So one God in the defense of the nation was a military doctrine that they had, which we don't see today. And it was also the political doctrine of the nation. And when they were right on, they didn't lose anybody. God fought for them, and they got what they were supposed to get. But when they lost their allegiance to the one true God, when they failed in that other area, they had other gods, then, or they didn't obey his commandments, then catastrophe followed, and loss of life followed, and wars begot other wars, because they get into the adversary cycle, and he doesn't like it to end. He just takes it around. Look at Leviticus 26. Some great promises from the Word. This is a wonderful chapter because it tells you what you get if you do, and it tells you what you get if you don't. So it's a pretty square deal all the way around. But we're also going to see here that how wonderfully God takes care of his people who worship him, who honor him, and who carry out his word. And the very first thing mentioned in chapter 26 here, Leviticus, is you shall make you no idols or graven images. And if you hear the question, what part of no don't you understand? No means no, none, zero, zip, none, one God. Not three, not two, not 50, not 100, one. There's one God, and he's the creator of the heavens and the earth, and he is the God and Father of the Lord Jesus Christ. You shall make no idols, nor graven images, neither rear up a standing image, neither shall you set up any image of stone or plastic in your yard or your land to bow down to it. I am the Lord your God. I love those. Never mind. And you should keep my Sabbaths and reverence my sanctuary. I am the Lord. Now, verse 3 begins with the word if, which is a condition. If you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments to do them, then the result starts with then, not before. Then I will give you rain in due season, and the land shall yield her increase, and the trees of the field shall yield their fruit. Now, there are seven promises here that are the direct result of no idolatry, and we'll keep looking at them. And your threshing will reach unto the vintage, and the vintage shall reach unto the sowing time. And you shall eat your bread and be full, and you shall dwell in your land safely. Tom, you're a farmer. Wouldn't you like for your threshing to reach to the vintage and the vintage to the sowing time? Pretty good deal, isn't it? It's a real good deal. And you'll dwell in the land safely. And I will give you what? Peace in the land. And you shall lay down, and none shall make you afraid. And I will rid evil beasts out of the land, neither shall the sword go through your land. You shall chase your enemies, and they shall fall before you by the sword. And five of you shall chase 100, and 100 of you shall put 10,000 to flight. And your enemies shall fall before you by the sword. and I will have respect for you. I will make you fruitful and multiply you and establish my covenant with you. All of this here is no idolatry. All you got to do is keep one God, and He's going to take care of you in every category of your life. Because essentially, there's very few people that believe that, or if they do believe it, they don't have a clear picture in their mind of worshiping one God. They let other things get in there. And you don't have to be religious to be into idolatry. Idolatry is anything or anyone or any system that comes before the one true God. If that's where your allegiance is, to a person or a place or a thing or anything, it's wrong. That alone should be reserved for God if you want to see the promises of God and the blessings of God in your life. War. Look at James 4. He'll tell you a little bit about war. War is a very hideous thing. It impoverishes everything. It destroys. It's terrible. In verse 4, chapter 4, verse 1 says, "From whence come wars and fightings among you?" Good question. But the word has the correct answers. "Come they not hence from your lust? Come they not hence even of your lust that war in your members? You lust and you have not. You kill and desire to have and cannot obtain. You fight and war, yet you have not, because you ask not. You ask and receive not, because you ask amiss, that you may consume it upon your lust." Why do you have war? Lust. Lust. That's why we have war. You know, it's what you see in the newspapers and on CNN is not the real cause of war. They're symptoms. And I thought it was very nice of General Schwarzkopf, after our Persian Gulf War, to thank CNN for allowing him to disseminate false information. They were very helpful, because he knew the Iraqis were watching. And he knew CNN would run to get it on television ahead of everybody else. So you could have your daily briefings, you never miss them. Make sure you have one every day. So you put your trust in man, and you'll liably find that they were used too. Look at Judges 5. There's another very simple definition of war.